Hey everybody, this is Mel and Brooke from Mom's Art 2. Okay, before we start the episode, stop listening right now and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
If you want to watch us make a fool of ourselves, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Mom's Art 2 and get video episodes each week.
All right, on to the show.
We are just two moms in search of inspiration.
While creating questionable comedy.
Mom's Art 2.
Silly. What? Silly. What?
Melanie Lee.
Brooklyn Assemble.
Are
Here
you ready?
We are.
Yeah. For another episode.
Of Real Real.
Now that real real. I know you guys are going to really enjoy all of our little segment interludes.
We wrote them ourselves.
We sure did. And we were completely sober.
Yeah, don't look at the video of them. This is a fun episode because I feel like Langdon brought in the room things that I didn't even realize I needed. She comes in with such a cool perspective because she works in the mental health field. Mm-hmm. That it was, it like cleared it. Like I felt a clearing happen to me.
Yeah. There was a clearing. There was some validation.
Yeah.
There was some reminders.
Yeah.
We all used to live in Panama together. So, we at least can share that expat insight with each other, that experience that we had and how we continue doing that. Now we're back in the States.
Yeah. And I would say, I know people might get sick of the fact that we talk about Panama or whatever, but it was such a crazy chapter that I think like everybody out there, think about what was your craziest chapter. Like for this was almost like my college years, right? It was a chunk of time that we all went crazy. We were all completely there for each other. We were all like totally in a brand new place, not knowing anything.
We had a lot of creative freedom.
We got married, had kids, had new children.
Yeah.
Found new partners. We had so many life changes during that time. So I think we refer to it as our Panama days, but I think everybody has or should have that in their life where they're like, wow, this chunk of time was my real learning.
Right. Especially with our situation, it's so unique.
Yeah.
And we were all experiencing it together. And
yeah.
Like you said, we've come out with some incredible relationships, one being with Langdon, who is back in the States as well. But we still, you know, communicate with and talk with and obviously get inspiration from.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about
it. I am too. She brought up something earlier about how you have people in your like she's. If you have a label that is your marriage or your children or your whatever, or your living situation or whatever it is, if you say something a little bit off color about it, right, to other people and they go, well, why isn't this happening in your life? And you're like, well, because this and this. The expat community has always been like, oh, cool. Yeah. So even when things would change, like relationships would change, there would be somebody that came down that was married and then they decided to have an open relationship and then they stayed married. And then like all, you know what I mean? So like everybody was so open that there was no judgment. And so it's weird sometimes coming back to the States and being like, oh yeah, this is normal to have these really random ways of looking about life. And you know that this group of people will always be like, oh, okay. Yeah. No big deal. Mm-hmm. That's your choice. Do it. You know, that's great.
And support you.
Mm-hmm. And there's not judgment. So it's funny. I think that is for me. That's what I kind of got out of it, too. I had people around me that were so like-minded.
Which is why we end up going back and continuing these relationships and having them on as guests, because it's a whole trust thing. It's like, because we've gone through this unique experience together. And you were so open and non-judgmental about where we were in our lives that I can trust you.
Yeah.
It's like a creative partner, even with some of the people we didn't even create with. Right. But it's that same kind of, trust. So check out this episode. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Are you ready for the real reel?
Are you going to stay out still? Just stay and listen to our, that real.
Yeah.
Just stay for that.
Well, then listen to
Lynn because
she will change your life.
Well, once you hear the real world, then you're going to staying for the episode.
That's true.
Because it's so good.
It's so good.
It's like, I need more of this craziness.
It's real.
You done with that real?
Welcome to Moms Are Too. This is a beautiful episode of The Real Real. Brooke, would you like to tell everybody?
The Real Real. Yes, thank you for joining us for The Real Real. We've got an old friend, Langdon Comey. We like to call her Lang the Dawn. she was known in Panama, which is how we met her.
Yes. Langdon Comey. hi, Langdon. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yes, girl.
She's in town visiting, and she has a lot to talk to us about because this girl's been through a lot and can share a lot. And we will. I'm excited to hear your story because I don't know anything really.
It's quite a journey. Yeah. it's quite a journey, and it's in strong juxtaposition to my life in Panama.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
It's definitely a 180 for sure.
Well, let's talk about how we know Langdon. So if you don't know, Melanie and I lived in Panama for a short time, and we got to meet.
How long were you there?
I was there 7 years.
Me too.
Yeah.
But different.
Different. Like, you came different a little seven. After. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we all had a child in Panama. All three of us through that.
That's not the same child.
Yes. Yeah, we were co-parenting.
We all really were co-parenting. Although I didn't have mine until after you guys both left, so I was fucking alone.
You weren't part of the mommy group.
No, I wasn't.
She was afraid of the mommy group, she said.
I was.
Really?
I was.
We had a little mommy group of, women in Panama with kids expats.
Yeah, there was a day where someone, I can't remember who it was having a baby shower. Because everybody was having babies and stuff. And I was invited and I was crying the whole way there because I was
it mine?
Maybe. Or Danielle's. There's two Danielles that had babies down there.
But you thought we bit? Like, why?
No, no. I didn't have anything necessarily in common. Right. But when we would go out and party, it was like we were all the same people. Expats are expats, right? Like we were talking about earlier. We all have the same mentality. We all love each other. It's all open to everyone's things. Right. And it doesn't matter who you are. You're always welcome. And we help each other out. And then, but for some reason in the mommy aspect, I didn't understand it. And I never wanted to even have kids. And so,
right, I remember when you were pregnant and there was it's not that you weren't excited about it, but there were trepidations. There was some ambivalence about what you were going to give up in the process, right?
Yeah.
Because you had a really interesting life.
For sure.
Right.
And so, I was always scared of everybody, but
what was fun too around that time was we kind of pulled Langdon into the theater world.
Yes.
You got to do some really fun stuff.
Yeah. That happened to me in Panama, honestly.
And you did. So I know at first you weren't you on our stage crew?
Yes,
our stage manager?
And then I tried out for improv.
And then you did improv. Yeah.
You did improv.
I did. I made it by the skin of my teeth. Honestly, I was so grateful that they gave me a chance.
No, you did well at improv.
I loved it. But I mean, there was some talent. There was some interesting talent in Panama. Unexpected level of people interested in theater and arts.
Yeah.
Right?
Who are bankers or lawyers or
dentists or something.
Yeah. And they just went and made sure that they had that outlet.
Yeah.
Which I think is a beautiful thing to have. Especially when you're in another country that, us, it was felt like that was so familiar. And then to have the people that you were really good friends with and that you could even bring in and we all got to create together, it was just freaking awesome. And not only just create together, but have drinks together on the porch. Oh, and it was a whole community vibe, that theater.
Well, even beyond the theater, the expat community, you don't have family to turn to, right? So we become each other's family. We're our, we're emergency contacts. We're, can you help me because I'm running late? I need,
I've been kidnapped.
Right. I mean, so that's it. Facts. That's reality. So I felt so connected to my expat community. That was, I really went through a jaws when I left Panama.
And it wasn't just for the help. From the help, right? Having live-in help. It wasn't just that.
I mean, I had zero muscle memory for that. I really was scrambling, trying to figure out how to be an effective mom and, maintaining of the household and working. That was really ripping off the Band-Aid for me. But no, it wasn't about that. It was about, I don't know, the openness and the community and also the ease of events. Whereas in the US, we're so overscheduled, we're so committed, we can live down the street from someone and see them once a month. There was just a lightness that I missed of, hey, what are you doing? Come over. Come grab a coffee.
Everything as hard as it was down there, everything was harder. It also, I had to learn how to be there are no rules. oh, okay, because I'm very like rigid and structured right. and like follow the rules and yep. and whatever. And so I remember one of my first time to the theater, Amit came to pick me up. And I was living in a high rise, and he came up and he pulled up onto the sidewalk because there was no parking. And he's like, yeah, just come downstairs. And I came down and I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, no, don't worry about it. I'm just here for a second. And no one batted an eye that they had to walk around this guy's car at the front door on the sidewalk of my thing, because it's just, yeah, whatever.
It'll well, stop it, signs it are suggestions. But one yeah. ways are suggestions. But
think of the contrast. Like I accidentally started walking across the street before the crosswalk was on in just a moment in California. Yeah, yeah. And I was mortified because I know every single person was like, we don't cross the street.
Actually, California just passed the law where it's not illegal now to jaywalk.
Oh, really?
You okay. get a ticket. Yeah, yeah. And so now everyone's like, yeah, fuck that. Like, they're, yeah. you can just tell everyone can't wait to jaywalk because yeah. they've been restricted for so long.
Everything's yeah, yeah. a suggestion in Panama, though. Yeah. Everything is sort of guidelines
yeah.
that are, you know, flexible.
It was right. hard to get used to. It was scary to get used to. But then after I came back to the States, I was kind of like, I mean. does it really matter? Like I finally got to a point where I was like, the world is not going to end if I take a nap during the day.
Right, move the needle a little bit.
Right,
you were good. Well, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there were areas where you appreciated some of the, I don't know, structural accountability, right? Like yeah. when you moved back to the States, there yes. was things like, well, I know that my mail is going to get into my mailbox, or I know that the trash that there is going to get
mail,
picked
that
up.
There's any mail service. That there's mail. Thank you, Benjamin Franklin.
I have right. an address.
That, yeah, good concept. Right.
Yeah, like that there's addresses, or that, you know, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I felt like if I'm going to sue somebody, not that I would, but, or go after somebody, that the law is going to work.
Right.
For the most part, yep. considering, because right. out there, now, it's just like.
If you're here and you get pulled over, you can't be like, I mean.
Here's $5 and my
take care
passport.
Of this here.
Yeah. yeah.
Can we work something? I mean, all of that. And I remember going to the US for a chunk of time, maybe in the summer, to visit my family. I was there 3 or 4 weeks, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would come back and people, it was palpable that I'd just been in the US. I was running too fast. I was talking too fast.
Oh,
I was stressed out.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
less patient. People knew that you been in the US for a while when you came back.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, you could feel it. So, you know, there's something I think, like, even just for your endocrine system, you're like, like this place. Like, when I'd get off the plane, there was that weird moldy smell.
Yeah.
And I was like,
forever.
I'm home.
Yeah.
But what I can say I experienced as a consequence of that
yeah.
is that I lost my executive functioning. My standards had slipped. Mm-hmm. My punctuality, my time management, my. Yeah. accountability even, really, because the metric was, the bar was so low, right?
Right.
Yeah. Panama, that when I got back into US work environment, I felt like I was out of shape. There's no other way to say it. I really, yeah. There was a year of personal and professional development to get back to the standard of performance required in a 2-income, no service in the house,
yeah,
very high professional standard workplace.
Yeah.
And that was a tough transition for me.
Hey, everybody. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about this new thing that we found is called Moonlight. It's amazing. We're still reading to our kids at night, and I can be honest with you, sometimes it's tedious because we're reading the same book over and over and over and over. Well, let me tell you, Moonlight is incredible. The magic of Moonlight is simple. It's the experience of reading together with a projection on the wall, because tablets, yes, are a staple for many families, and digital books can be overstimulating sometimes for little kids, and honestly, they leave little room for imagination. But Moonlight bridges the gap between traditional and digital books. There are playful projections, vivid sound effects, and read-along features make this multi-sensory story time a delight. Moonlight is here to help you create imagination-filled, interactive bedtimes for your whole family and make story time magical again. Use the code MOONLIGHT10 with our link to get an extra 10% off your purchase. It's very cool. You left Panama, and then where did you move from there?
Well, in Panama, I started working for my mother remotely for, and we have a mental health facility. It's been in, at that point, it had been in place for 27 years.
Yeah.
Her office manager resigned and I understood the business. I'd grown up in it and she needed my help. So I just took over and we, you know, it was back in the day we had Skype and we had like a Maryland number. Right. Yeah. And I was learning
Skype.
How to, So I took over and I began to take a larger and larger role. And I still, you know, my youngest was only 1 year at this point. Oh, and then there was a point where after working with her for a couple of years, she said, you know, I'm not in a position where I want to run my business. I don't want to work in and on my business anymore. Yeah, yeah. So if you want to maintain this role, come home and we can grow the business together. Or I'm going to shut down this structure and I'm going to go to a private practice. And that was a tough call because I was leaving everything I loved. I'd been there 7 years, but I also realized I wasn't going to be able to offer the same opportunities to my kids if I didn't go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of being able to replicate the kind of really interesting extracurriculars, the education, the interventions, the supplements of music, art, tutoring. Yeah. Right. And so I was wrestling with that a little bit. And that's not to defame Panama. I think it actually has a lot of offerings. But I also didn't know if I was going to be in a position financially to be able to offer these things on my trajectory in Panama.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was two strikes against me. And I decided to return home and take on this opportunity.
Yeah.
Which it's in Maryland, D.C. area.
It's in Maryland, D.C. area. Mm-hmm. And so I came back pretty humbly. And my mother's a person that does not dole out offerings easily. So I had to earn my stripes in the positions. I was the office manager and then I was the practice manager and I was the managing director. Now I'm the CEO.
Yeah.
And now I'm an owner. Right? Nice. But that trajectory was 12 years.
My gosh. That's amazing.
So that's what you're doing now, right? So you're managing what was your mom's like concept of like her career, right? Like what she would kind of was founded on. She's a psychologist and a well-known one.
She's internationally known for ADHD specialization and also focus in under-focused on underserved population. Sorry. Girls, women, aging now, you know. So there are a lot of subsets where people didn't get research and there was no investment in how that manifested in their population. Mm. So she's very well-known and being like, who are we not looking at?
Oh, that's amazing.
And going, taking deep dives into other subsets of ADHD.
So what's the, are you allowed to say the name of the company?
Yeah, of course. It's the Chesapeake Center for Learning and Behavioral Health. And we used to be the Chesapeake ADHD Center, but our scope expanded far beyond ADHD.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went into any comorbidities. So, you know, people who come to us, at least especially if they're adult, they now are anxious or maybe they're depressed, or maybe they have OCD. There's usually a cluster of things that we're helping by the time they get to us. And then the concept was we wanted to offer a collective set of services that would serve our population's mission in recovery, but I didn't want them going all over town, right? I didn't want them getting an assessment here.
Yes.
A psychiatrist here who doesn't know their therapist
and
here.
And no one's communicating to each other. Yeah.
No one's talking. There's no case collaboration and they're having to start their story over 15 times.
Yes.
Right?
Shit.
Okay. So we were like, I looked at everything as a, you know, from the lens of an ADHD mom with kids who need services and what do I need as a parent? And I designed the company from the lens of the mom who needs the services, not to leave the dads out, but
no, but
I mean, I could, that's my viewpoint. So I developed it from my viewpoint. And so that's what it's really about. It's a really dynamic, interesting place, tons of continuing education, collaboration. It's grown exponentially. It's a very different animal than when I took it over.
Yeah.
But what's been fun about it in trying to hold on to a little bit of, I guess, who I was in Panama, because there's really very little in my life now that, that was, you know.
Yeah, fun.
Able. No mañana.
There's no mañana. Yeah. There's just the demands currently on my life don't really.
Yeah.
And I know this is a moment in time and that'll come back. But like, where did I see myself? How did I continue to bring myself into the story? And I guess my feeling on that is the culture of my company. It reflects who I, it's where I wanted to work. My mom and I tried to design a place that we would want to work. So I got to think about, And I don't know if I'm succeeding, but I think I am. Employee benefits, you know, workplace culture, adjusting in a lot of, especially post-pandemic, how do we keep people connected? How do we keep the discussion going? How do we people in growth mode?
Yeah.
That's been really hard. But what's fun is I don't need to ask permission.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's yours.
It's mine.
Yeah. That's incredible. Is it also a live-in facility or is it outpatient kind of?
We're not Acuity. So we have a lot of good partnerships that we can refer when people need more intensive intervention. Yeah. But that's not really what we do. We do ADHD, learning disabilities, and any affiliated comorbidity, meaning like what else do you have?
And right? That's all.
Like, yeah. Anxiety. Okay.
So it's assessment. It's program. It's services,
there's coaching,
all within
the
in-house Chesapeake Center.
Where are you guys located?
Our flagship's in Bethesda.
Okay.
And then we have a Silver Spring in Fulton. So all of that's Maryland. And then we just opened up a Ponte Vedra, Florida office.
Okay.
So we're looking to try to make some potential expansion in the future, but we're more concerned about how do we create our clinical standard before we do that? Because I've seen a lot of people grow and drop.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, are you afraid of, I work with somebody right now who's really afraid to expand because it's so much about A, her company culture, but B, the way she treats the animals or people or whatever. Right. And so her taking a step back or you opening up different places, like how do you make sure that your company culture is carried through? Is that in the hiring process? Is that in like a, do you have like a Bible, a training Bible, or like, how does that?
Are you going to make videos where you're like, hey, welcome to the Chesapeake Learning
Center?
I mean, there is some of that because training shouldn't be hard. You should like take the things that feel redundant out of the work because I'm hiring people to think, right? I can automate so much. The people that work for me, it's because they're dynamic. It's because they are people attuned. It's because they're interesting, right?
Right.
So part of it is the people. I think it starts with who you hire and are they also, like with my clinicians, for instance, are they supporting this kind of culture I want? Like if you want a super hierarchical culture, that's I'm not the place.
Right.
I don't think that certain people have more value because of their credentialing.
Right.
It's, you know, like I always say restaurant doesn't work without the dishwasher.
Yeah.
No most shit. Important place and person in the entire restaurant is the dishwasher, right? So it's a very egalitarian place. It's a very work-life balance place. Like what do I want? And I think there's a lot of conversation and there's a lot of input. We're always better by soliciting everyone's opinion.
Yeah.
And that there really is very little that isn't done from a collaborative mindset. So all of the hires, both on the administrative side and the clinician side, are so strong that we are continually better as a result by bringing them into the dialogue.
Right. Oh, my God. That's so smart.
So after going into quarantine and having more of a facility, I think, from what I remember, that everything was in-house. Like, you had to come. So now you've been able to expand the business, if I'm not mistaken, because you can outsource to different states. You're not just limited to. And is that still the case where, you know, your therapists can work with someone in California or?
Not actually. Oh. And I think so we did have some expansion. No, you're
why
not
are
wrong.
You here?
You're not wrong. It's just more complicated. It was.
I need to go to your center.
I need to go to the center.
No, I really do, actually. Yeah.
Well, I think that there was it was a lawless moment where they just opened up the floodgates and you could practice because people needed services regardless of where they were.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there's some motivation in restricting how many doctors and how many, you know, psychiatrists and how many, because they're controlling markets. They're controlling markets through licensure. They're controlling markets through capping how many people come through the program. And whether it's intentional or not, the result is that we don't have enough people.
Shit.
So what happened is that they started closing these portals and going back to more conventional modalities of treatment.
So I can't get any treatment.
Well, no, they're pushing back, which I love. So there's something called the SciPac. And as soon as we get 50% of the states to agree, then the whole thing opens up. And if you have a SciPac license, you can practice in 50 states. So there was this radical opening. There was this backlash.
The pendulum had to swing way far for it to be able to come back too far. Right. And now they find the sweet spot again.
And there's such a campaign from all doctors of saying you're penalizing so many people that don't have access to specialists, that are living in rural areas. Like, come on, get with it.
Yeah.
We demonstrated this works.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm in this weird moment of trying to navigate what was good, what came out of the pandemic that we're never going to go back from. Like, we have a lot less cancellations. Why? Because moms are exhausted. And if they can put their kid online four times a month versus having to spend another extra 2 hours with the commute, yes, right, back and forth. There's just more consistency. There's more continuity. Mm-hmm. Now, do I think that sometimes it should be in office for both, like, for both administrative collaboration or, you know, CEs or, and should you meet somebody maybe first online, in person before you?
Right.
And so what I think we're fighting now is, where do we land? I don't think you can just go back to that arbitrarily because that's what feels right, because it was of days of old, right? There's so much good. There's so much we learned about resetting the way we live.
Right.
So I don't want to step away from that, but I am constantly fighting to bring people in the same room.
Yeah.
There's a resistance.
There's something about it. That's in the same with acting and stuff, is now everything's done online. And I was wondering in the beginning about, like, how do you cast off of culture, or how do you cast off of chemistry if somebody isn't in the room? And I sometimes would book just because I became friends with people. And so navigating that, I think, is interesting, because especially in that case, feeling someone's literal energy coming off of them.
Right.
Changes in the room. You can smell it.
Vibe.
I mean, I'm not saying you should smell your patients, but
we could.
Listen,
but we're not adverse to it.
Right. Whatever works, right?
But I mean, I absolutely agree. And I think even just meeting someone one time, and then being online thereafter, once I've actually met them person to person, has a different relationship, even just knowing them once.
Yeah.
I'm a believer in person. It's why I went into it. So I'm struggling a little bit. It feels removed. It feels distant.
Because you started out remotely, and then you moved there and were in office and had the ability to then kind of like see it for what it really was, not just a kind of a distant place.
I was in it, right? Yeah. Everyone was in it. That was how this industry has been changed forever. The likelihood of it going back
all the way,
nil. Yeah. Absolutely nil. But I think just like any pendulum, I think it will swing back. I think we are having these moments of in-person collaboration or an in-person class, and we're remembering all the good, that, like, how great it feels, how the energy you have after those moments. And so it's I think a slow regression back to maybe the middle, but it'll never be what it was.
Yeah.
How are you even, you know, look, you came from that area, right? Like, that's where you're from.
Yeah.
So you're in that East Coast world.
Decidedly. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But you come from that. You went to boarding school when you were in high school. Went to really great colleges as well. She went to Columbia and Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. No big deal. But then she goes to Panama and like totally laxing out. I mean, look, we had some fun though. She was running some
lots of parties.
Some parties.
Was it your 30th
promotion?
Birthday? What birthday?
My 40th. That was my 40th, right? The hip hop night Panama.
Hip hop night Panama. If you don't know now, you know, you better go look it up. That's what I'm talking about. And then you have to go back into this world. Yeah. And I'm just, you know, you're almost like you're two different people, or you have to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Without question.
But how often do you get to be the Panama Langdon?
Almost never.
Never.
Almost never. Yeah.
What are you doing to, like,
do you miss
what are you doing with your life? What's happening when you're not working and being a mom and it's all crazy?
Well, I mean,
to be able to feel that way.
I think you also have to, like, take it in the context of who I am in this moment too, right? Do I miss my relationships? I miss my ladies. I miss the lightness of being. I miss the weather. I miss just the general sense of calm I would feel. But I don't know if I miss some of the other components. Like, I really enjoyed them, but I don't know. I don't think I'm the same person to extract the joy out of these hip hop. I'm more settled. I need less stimulation.
You need more consistency and expectation.
But I think that's the thing, is we find sort of what we like, right? Like, you realize that, no, we don't want to do necessarily hip hop every night because I can't be up that late and I can't drink that much and I can't make that many friends because I don't give a shit about people anymore. And, like, you know what I mean? Like,
that's all what I'm saying. Things, I'm in a different spot, right?
But what I do like is the weather and the beach access and the able to take a vacation that feels like a vacation, but it costs very little. Like, so taking a boat out or going to the Bahamas from Florida right. is like a 45-minute boat ride or like that kind of stuff. So now that you're opening something in Florida, that stuff might like...
You might get the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Huh?
I don't know. I think life has chapters. And if you resign yourself to the role and the responsibility of each one, it makes it a little less... grading. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is my moment. I have a moment where I have two kids and I need to finish the job. And yeah. I'm in my moment of 50s that I call it like parenting in double directions. I'm supporting my parents now with very significant end of life changes. Yeah. And I'm parenting my still adolescent kids. And that's just kind of what you do at a certain moment of your life. If you're in it, if you're loyal, if you're committed to your family, there's just a decade where you're grinding it out. And everyone did it. And I know very shortly I'm going to have so much freedom and flexibility and opportunity. You know what I mean?
You see like, the end of this chapter soon. So you feel like you can be in it a little bit more without feeling anxious about your own self and stuff like that.
Yes. Like, I feel like in some ways, like I joke about my Panama chapter that it's my well-behaved midlife crisis. But I've had so many moments of joy and fun and experiment. I've lived in countless cities. I've done a lot. Right.
Yeah.
So what I need to know is I did this part well, because it's really my most important job that I'll ever have.
That's so smart. And it really takes the anxiety and guilt out of... Because we want to be it all, right? We want to be it. Where did the fun Mel go? Or where did the fun, you know, whatever. And I got to put myself out there and da-da-da. And then but I'm tired.
Exactly. Right? That's what I was just thinking in my head. I was like,
and sometimes this is just enough. Yeah. And sometimes this is just enough. And I think because we are bred to do it all, to be the fun, be the wild, be the exciting, be the mom, be the wife, be the business owner, be the child of aging parents, that I feel like we can't do it all. And it's also okay to just be here and do this part well, like you said. You
can't like get hung up on what you think you're failing at, because there's no possible way anybody can do all of that.
Not only that, but some of the stuff that we feel like we're failing at, we don't really want to be doing right now anyway.
I mean, yeah, I guess the word is failing. Like, are we, you know, putting it on the back burner for a little bit? Are we just like actively deciding to disengage in that part of our life for a minute because it's going to be okay when we come back to it? I think failing is like a loaded word, right? So when I'm simplifying, I'm trying to take choices out. I'm trying to be realistic about it.
You talked about that too.
Mm-hmm. And I'm bad at it. Like, I'm decidedly bad at it. My life is really, really complicated, right? And I make sometimes unreasonable choices, like being here in LA. I was like, I do not have time for this. I don't care. I'm not missing this opportunity.
Yeah, we've missed our link ups a couple times.
Right. So exactly. So I think that it's trying to navigate priorities, basically, and boundaries. Because I did not set them early enough in my life. I would say 40 to 50, I was just available to everyone.
Yes. Jesus fucking
and
no.
I was angry about it. What I was realizing is I was like, you're making decisions and then you're mad at people because of the decision you made.
Right. Then so you resent other people.
So I can't do anything about the way they're behaving. I can only set better boundaries for me.
So again, tell us where your center is.
We're in Bethesda, Maryland, and it's our flagship, but we also are in Fulton, Maryland, and we're in Silver Spring, Maryland, and we're in Ponte Vedra, Florida.
Dang! And it's called
The Chesapeake Center for ADHD, Learning, and Behavioral Health.
Well, it's everybody listens here has ADHD, I'm sure.
Well, that's they do now because they listen to us and we're like contagious.
I tell everybody, you can thank me, because this center would not exist if I wasn't such a train wreck.
There you go. Oh, I love that.
I was my mother's inspiration.
I know. You were actually.
I know.
No, that's not a lie.
And I have helped thousands of people as a result.
Oh my God. That is so, I just got the chills. That's amazing. Are you on
social media at all? Or is it just
We have a very large social media presence on Instagram and on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And
well, you'll find it on our link. We'll YouTube, get all of those things. I don't think you're on social media. Are you very much? I mean, a little?
I don't know if I'm as social media oriented as I used to be.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I want off.
Oh, well, we have to for work. That's really the only reason why I do it. Oh, Well,
we're going to talk about it because I want to
hear anymore. No, bye. It'll be me. And good luck with that.
Moms are too.
Got something to tell you
right now.
Today.
Oh, I was watching and listening to the Alex Murdoch.
Oh.
Murder case, right?
Yeah.
And I try to be as unbiased as possible. And I understand this guy for murdered his fucking family. But I try to be like, if I was a juror.
Right.
Right? How would I? So I'm trying to listen to like all of the, you know, things. And I was thinking like, he isn't guilty. From what I'm hearing right now, he's not guilty. And then someone asked me or in my conversations in my head. And then I was like, but I didn't watch the whole trial. I only watched a little bit of it. And then I thought, well, that's how fucking stupid I am. Like, I totally jumped to conclusions about he's not guilty.
You know what, though? I wasn't sure.
I don't know.
I wasn't sure until, I don't know. I felt the same way. I was just like, some things just don't add up. I thought there was at least a reasonable doubt.
I did, too.
But other people didn't believe him. But I think we also maybe,
I listened to too many murder casts where I'm really invested in, like, how I should listen. I listen to all the murder casts, which means I am always listening to the murder casts that are like, you know, they were in prison for 30 years and then the DNA came out and it takes 20 more years to like get them out of prison and whatever. And so I feel that maybe we don't need to, like, maybe as a society, we just shouldn't judge what we see on the news. That's the only thing I came out with. He's probably guilty.
He probably is.
I mean, we'll find out in 30 years.
Too many people died.
Too many people.
On his property.
Yeah.
Wow. You made it through the whole episode. We really appreciate that.
And you know what else we would really appreciate? If you went to Apple Podcast or wherever you listen and rate and review Moms Are Too.
It really helps us so much and lets other future listeners get an idea of what they're getting themselves into.
That's right. Moms Are Too is produced by Rob Adler with Brooklyn Frequency. Music by Kai Sample.